What's going on, everyone? You're listening to the Long Island Sound Podcast, your source for everything Isles and the only Islanders podcast to beat the Florida Panthers, the St. Louis Blues, the Winnipeg Jets, the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Arizona Coyotes, the Ottawa Senators, Philadelphia Flyers, Tampa Bay Lightning, Buffalo Sabres, and the Ottawa Senators again en route to the 10-game winning streak. I'm one of your hosts, Damon Vetteri, and I am joined by Kenny Ivero.
How's it going, guys?
And Ben Cohen.
How excited are we all to talk about a 10-game winning streak?
We're pumped.
Can't believe this is real.
We're recording right after the latest Islanders win against the Ottawa Senators. And, man, it is just – we've never seen this in our lifetime, all three of us.
It was 37 years, something like that.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time. And like Brendan said in the broadcast tonight, it's just interesting how many different ways they're finding to win. I mean, like tonight, Cole Bardreau, the rookie's first NHL goal on a penalty shot. You know, they stole some games early in the streak. They've locked down teams, you know, in the third period. I think this was their most impressive block of games. So last time we recorded, since then, they've played, Isles have played the Tampa Bay Lightning. They've played the Buffalo Sabres and the rematch game against the Ottawa Senators. And to play the Lightning back-to-back with the Sabres, I mean, those are two good hockey teams. I know the Lightning haven't been playing, you know, to their standard, but the Sabres have been a wagon this season. And, I mean, the Isles go up to Buffalo, shut them out in their own building, you know, score five on the Lightning, and then come back and you know, score four quick goals to close out the Senators. I mean, it's just this team is just finding all different sorts of ways to win. They've had solid goaltending. They've really had good scoring, you know, right down the lineup from the first line to the fourth line or whatever the fourth line and third line is now. But, I mean, top six, bottom six, the defenses look good. I mean, everything is just clicking for this team. And, I mean, they're 11-3 to start the season. 11-3.
It's absolutely unreal. I mean, to begin the year, we were just talking about, like, let's get to the wild card, you know, like we overachieved last year. And, you know, there was that little bit of glimpse of, oh, okay, you know what, maybe Trotz's system a whole nother year. Maybe we could be the same, but to be better, you know, I think we look better than we did last year. Everyone just looks comfortable. It doesn't matter who's in the lineup. You have all these random guys showing up, Bardreau, you know, like it's just next guy up and they all look great. And obviously we're going to get to a little bit later in the podcast, like what do you do when you start bringing back guys that like Eberle and Ladd and, you know, guys that have been on the team for a while? What kind of changes do you make?
We said it last week with especially with guys like Barzal, but really up and down the lineup, these guys, they're getting used to the Trotz system to the point where they don't just have to, you know, if they're defensive first guys, you know, continue to focus on the defense, but now they're comfortable in the system. They can focus on the offense. And that really sticks out to guys who are more offensive heavy or focused like Barzal, because, you know, he spent last year getting the defensive system down, and now he can, when he has the puck, he can do whatever the fuck he wants with it. And it's not just him. You look at Josh Bailey doing his thing, Brock Nelson, and then also guys like Oliver Wahlstrom. Noah Dobson looked so much more comfortable tonight. When he would pinch in, you could tell how much confidence he had, especially after that, after the goal tonight. Well, we're recording after the Senators game where Bailey tipped it in. He's just so much more confident. The team is confidence is sky high. It's just a joy to watch.
Yeah, well, this was the first game that Dobson really had a fairly regular shift with the Leddy injury. And there's, you know, obviously the lineup looks very odd and unique. I don't think we would have ever predicted that this would be what the lineup looks like 14 games in with, you know, a guy like Bardreau, who I think if you would have asked each of us at the start of the season, we would have said, who? Followed by, no, he'll never play a game in the NHL. And yet he's contributing in a big way. I love him as the fourth line center. I really do. I know he's not a long-term solution, but for right now, it's great. And, you know, you're right, Ben. You know, defensively, the system is there. And now it's generating a lot more goals for, and it's nice to see. I mean, tonight 4-1, it just goes to show you. And right now, Isles are sitting tied for best in the league yet again for goals against. They've got 30. They're tied. It's a three-way tie, actually, with the Boston Bruins. And you guys want to take a guess who?
Arizona. I cheated.
You're such a cheat. Unbelievable. All right. Well, stole my thunder. Yep. The Arizona Coyotes. Weird. It's weird. And then right behind them, 33 goals allowed, the Vancouver Canucks. Like, the league is changing.
Anaheim, too. Like, right there. It's, I know it's 39, but, like, Anaheim was supposed to be terrible this year. Like, no one. It's kind of weird. I mean.
John,
like,
Gibson's a brick wall, though. He's playing out of his
True. He is.
But look at Edmonton. Gibson's too.
Incredible. Gibson's incredible. 10. So, all right, without cheating, where do you think the Islanders are then out of 31 teams for goals for?
I already looked, so I'm not going to say. I'm a stat guy.
Four? I'm going to go 11.
Little too optimistic. 19th.
13.
19th. So they're floating. They're floating in the middle. They're, you know, middle of the pack.
Optimistic.
but you stay middle of the pack with the best goals against, and you know you got something with a top five power play. You know, which, you know, maybe we're not, but I think our power play is going to be at least average. Our penalty kill seems to be doing a little bit better. So
yeah, the kill's been real good. I know the power play gave up a shorty tonight on kind of a weird play. That was just a, you know, it was a broken play. It was the only goal Ottawa
this
scored.
This was a weird game in general. Two shorthanded goals, penalty shot, goals weird. 30 seconds apart. It was one of those like games. I feel like we were in control the whole time. I don't think we were ever. I never thought we were going to lose tonight at any point. Like, you just kind of knew, even when they scored that shorthanded goal, I'm like, we're going to be fine.
Well, yeah, that's where I think the team has turned the corner now. If you watch them regularly, which you know, obviously we do, and so many Islander fans do, you just know when this team is in shutdown mode, and they've been that way for, I wouldn't say the whole winning streak, I would say a good 60%, 70% maybe. They stole a few, you know, that shootout win against the Panthers early on. They stole the game against the Blues. But then they've kind of been, you know, improving, and they're just firing on all cylinders now, and they really are. You never, these last three games, you really never doubted that they were going to win. They just are playing with that swagger, which is so nice to see. So rather than getting really into the game by game breakdown, I think we want to talk about some more of the general trends we're seeing during this winning streak. I think it's a good time to kind of get into that, being 14 games in. So let's talk about the goalies first. And when we were in the early part of the podcast and in the before the preseason games even started, one of the big question marks coming into the season was Robin Lehner. How do the Islanders replace him? He was a Vezina finalist. He had, you know, incredible stats. He did split the season with Grice, but he was the Islanders' go-to in the playoffs. And I want to read some stats for you guys between Thomas Grice and Semyon Varlamov. Grice has played 8 games. Varlamov has played 7. Grice did come in for the one when they did pull Varley in one of the losses. But save percentage for Thomas Grice is a .937. Save percentage for Varlamov is a .929. Goals against for Thomas Grice is an even 2.00. And for Semyon Varlamov, it's 2.14. I mean, again, it's almost identical numbers, just like Grice and Lehner last year. Now it's Grice and Varley. And we all kind of, to a point, I think each of us in a different episode earlier on, all said, this team is going to be fine. Yes, there's an unknown there, but we think that the system is going to make up for what's, you know, who's between the pipes. And right now you're seeing it. It's just business as usual. It's the same as last season. And again, for the numbers to be, I mean, Grice is 6-1, Varley's 5-2. I mean, these guys are just, they're dialed in right now, and they're almost mirror images of one another. And Kenny, I'll kind of let you get into this, because I know you wanted to talk about it this week. And you said from day one that you thought that this wasn't going to be a problem and Varley was going to be just fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think the most impressive thing is, like, usually when you think of goaltender or good goaltending, it's like they get hot and they go on streaks, but these guys have literally rotated like a consistent every other game and have still played this good. I mean, I can't imagine like what's going to happen if, you know, they let them play a couple games in a row. It might be better, it could be worse, but usually you see goaltending get hot and then play four or five games in a row, you know, win three out of four, and then they, you know, you switch to something else. But I just think it's impressive how they just, every other game, like, they're both ready to go. It's obviously speaks to the system and Mitch Korn, the goaltending coach. Yeah, like I said.
Well, technically, Piero Greco is the goaltending coach. Mitch Korn's the the head of goaltending or the goaltending coordinator. He's got some weird like nebulous title.
Gotcha. But, he's guys working under him or something. But,
yeah.
Good for him. That's the way to do it. But like, I mean, it's just I'm impressed. And like I said, I mean, Varlamov going into last year. If you would have said to me who you want, Lehner or Varlamov, as the Islanders' next goalie, Lehner didn't prove anything previously going to the Islanders. Varlamov had just as good of a track record. He's just as good of a goalie, played on some bad defensive teams, inconsistent teams. And yeah, in general, we kind of, as this podcast goes, we were totally on board with, we're going to be fine. You know, where a lot of people were making this a big deal that Lehner was leaving, especially non-Islander specific podcasts, like in general, the NHL.com and TSN were all like, well, the Islanders are going to be in trouble this year because, you know, they had hot goaltending. But like you said, if you watch every game, that wasn't the case, really. You know, we had good goaltending, but the 10 wins we just had has nothing to do with any of the goalies standing on their heads, really.
No, it doesn't. And it's true they've played well. I mean, you look at Greiss, I think tonight he was, you know, 24 of 25. But it's like you said in the offseason, Kenny, shots to the outside, it's the system. And are we, it's not to take anything away from Thomas Greiss, Robin Lehner, and Semyon Varlamov, because they're three really good goaltenders. But and I don't think any of us are saying that Cam Talbot would be able to put up these numbers under the system, but they're three good goaltenders that are playing as well as you could hope, and they're playing in front of the best defense you could hope to play behind. They're playing behind the best defense you could hope to play behind. And when you look at the guys in front of them, I think I said it last week that they're not household names, but Adam Pellick leading the Islanders in ice time, he was absolutely flawless today. Absolutely flawless. He won every battle. There was a penalty kill shift where he had, I think, a minute and 39 seconds of ice time, and he recovered in like the 120th second to make a crazy diving block. And it's just like, wow, what a player.
He turned a corner, Pellick. Yeah. This season, he looks like a different player.
And even last year, he was great.
To the max. Yeah.
So not to take anything away from Lehner, I just want to go back real quick to this because while Greiss and Varley have very solid numbers and are playing in front of a solid decor, Robin Leonard's playing in front of Swiss cheese or behind Swiss cheese, I guess, in the net. But his save percentage, he's third in the league with a 939. So good for him.
Chicago lets up the most shots on net.
Oh, it's insane. Dude, and he's still got a 939 save percentage. It's unbelievable. So
good for you, Robin. We're rooting for you.
Yeah, I want him to look, I'll play them in the cup finals. I mean, they're not even gonna make the playoffs, but I love Lehner. So good on him. But yeah, I think that goes to show you that, you know, Lehner was kind of like, you know, he felt like when he got everything behind him or, you know, addressed a lot of the issues, the off ice issues, he was able to put his game together. And I think the Islanders were a good structure for that, but he's clearly talented and this is showing. So good for him. The nice thing is we don't have to worry about being beholden to goaltenders because I think as you're seeing again, you know, Greiss doesn't have to light the world on fire back there. He doesn't have to make the crazy reactionary saves, the breakaway saves. I mean, he's good when he needs to be. I mean, he's doing everything that's asked of him. But we don't need a Carey Price, a Tuukka Rask, you know, a Braden Holtby back there. the system's gonna limit a lot of those scoring chances. So you know, the goalies have been good when we've needed them, but it's just, yeah, it's just that system is just absorbing a lot of the stress that a team will take on those high danger chances. And really, I mean, tonight especially, I mean, I know they're not playing a very good team, but besides like a handful, like they were sloppy in the first period. Second, third period, I really don't think Ottawa had many chances, even on their power plays. Everything was limited to the outside. There's nothing going on there. There was nothing. You never were worried. Like, you know, a couple of plays here and there. That were, in the first period, Namestnikov had a couple of plays where, like, he was just coming down almost, you know, uncontested. And I was like, what's going on here? How does he have this much room? But they ended up not developing into anything. But that was really it. After the first period, they clamped it down again, like they usually do. So another thing we should mention, too, is tonight's game was the first game back at Barclays Center. And I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. It looked like it was pretty full building. It was loud. I don't know if they cranked up the mics or what, but it was a loud atmosphere.
Yeah.
Good on the fans. That was nice to see.
For sure. It looked – I'm curious what the attendance was, but it looked totally full. And the Hey Josh Bailey's at the end, oof. When they were showing – when they panned the camera to him where he was I think it was like pouring water down his neck, like he just always is doing that on the bench when the camera pans to him. But they panned to him when they were singing the Josh Bailey song. And it's, imagine if however many thousand people are singing your name and you don't react. Like, I understand not, you know, having like a smile while you're, you know, on the ice with the puck, you know, trying to find Matt Barzal. But sitting on the bench, you know, at a break, how can you not, like, smile?
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't show a lot of emotion, Bailey.
No, he doesn't. He's a cool, yeah. He's just a very calm guy, you know, and that's okay. Like, he just quietly goes about his business. Attendance tonight was 11,212, so still, I'm sorry, but still embarrassingly low. You know, the thing that annoys me more than anything else isn't so much that there's not a lot of people going. I mean, I can't talk. I live in Florida now. I mean, so that's what I think a majority of Islander fans have honestly relocated. They're not in the area anymore. That's why the meetups are so well attended and why we have so many people in Carolinas and in the Florida games and everything. But what annoys me about the attendance is just that that's what people are talking about during the winning streak. You know, you listen to like the Hockey News podcast or you listen to, you know, just any national broadcast, social media stuff. It's always, oh, the Islanders are, you know, they won 9 in a row. They win 10 in a row, but nobody goes and no one cares. And that's what sucks. That's just like, it's embarrassing. It really does suck. But it was loud tonight, so I'll take it. I mean, it is what it is. Until we're in Belmont, I don't know if you can say much. If this is still happening after they build Belmont and they have a good team, I don't know what to say at that point. Then I just don't think there should be that many franchises in the New York area because it can't sustain it, I guess. I don't know. But,
yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing that annoys me. So
I looked at tickets today. I went that far. So I didn't actually go. I'm like, oh, let me check it out. I'm like, I could, like, play a shift for, like, $100. Like, it was, like, so cheap. But, yeah. Didn't go. It's too much of a pain going to Barclays.
Yeah, Barclays is tough. That's what people who aren't from the area, like I was trying to explain to Jules, because, you know, you hear, oh, well, you know, they're playing in two arenas and they're not that far from each other. But like I was trying to explain to her, you literally have to leave an hour sooner if you're lucky to get to a 7 o'clock start in Brooklyn if you live in Suffolk County. And you've got to, you can't, like, there's not a parking lot there. So you got to drive into Brooklyn, which is a nightmare during rush hour and all that other nonsense. Then try to find a parking garage or street park. That's never going to work. So then the trains, you got to, like, you know, hop on, you know, 8 different trains to get there. It's just such a nightmare where the
call during rush hour.
So, yeah, it's just so it is what it is. But
going to make it so much easier for both for Manhattan fans and for Long Island fans, just because for Manhattan, you won't have to change trains at
and we'll have direct line out here.
And then in Long Island, obviously, it's going to be easy because it's,
plus, you know, you're going to get a lot of people that aren't just there for the hockey. You're going to get a lot of people that are there to see, you know, be in a state of the art entertainment facility, you know, and that's something that's going to be you know, a huge draw too. So we'll see. I mean, whatever. I mean, I'm causing part of the problem now. I'm talking about it on my podcast, but it's like, it's annoying, you know, and that's like, that shouldn't be the lead in. The lead in should be, this is a team that everybody said again was going to suck. It was regression season and all this. And you know what? They're proving everybody wrong yet again. And yet we have to now that they can't poke holes in the team anymore, they've got to take shots at the fans and say, oh, well, nobody cares anyway. So whatever. It is what it is. Ranger fans want to rub it in Islander fans' faces. Well, Rangers are 19th in the league in attendance. So shut up. Anyway.
Yeah. And half the people there are with suits. So
yeah, for sure. So let's talk about where the team is going, and what I mean by that is how the roster is going to look now that we've got some faces returning. So Jordan Eberle's practicing now in a non-contact jersey, so he's still a little ways away. Andrew Ladd is going to play one more game in Bridgeport over the weekend, and then I think he's coming back to the team. So we are going to look at some changes on this roster, and first things first, let's talk about the big one, which is going to be Eberle when he comes back. Where do you guys think Eberle slots in when he's healthy and he's ready to play? Because that first line with Lee, Barzy, and Bailey has looked real, real good, and I would be very hesitant to break that up, but then are you putting Jordan Eberle on the third line? I mean, I don't know. Ben, what do you got?
Well, that's the thing, is the obvious answer is play him where he played in training camp, you know, with Barzal and Lee. But like you said, Bailey's been amazing with them too. And then you think, okay, you know, there's the second line. The Islanders, you know, like to have the two attacking lines, two more defensive lines. But Broussard, Nelson, and Beauvillier look good together too. So where are you slotting in? And to me, I think when you easing him back to the lineup, back in the lineup would be easiest in the third line, because that way also the obvious thing is that he's going to have less ice time in the beginning, and then you see where it goes from there. Because by the time Eberle's back and, you know, has a couple games under his belt, and you'll see where he is in terms of production, you'll see if the Broussard thing was a fluke. You'll see if, you know, Beauvillier and Nelson are still working out. Hopefully Nelson not having a point in the first three games in November is coincidence and not anything more, unless I'm wrong about that. Although I know he doesn't have a goal, maybe he has an assist.
You're wrong.
Assist somewhere. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. Good call. Toby continues to do well in Newcastle. Yeah. Good call.
Kenny totally derailed Ben. Ben doesn't know where to go from here now. Ben's like,
how many years of him this in October? Yeah, I'm sure. It's like, I'm sorry.
No. But regardless of that, you'll know what happens on the second line, and so you can adjust from there, which is why it's hard to speculate. But at the same time, you have to, because Islanders have won 10 games in a row. They have Cole Bardreau and Oliver Wahlstrom in the lineup, and you don't think those guys are going to stay in the lineup for much longer. And right now, it's looking like, regardless of who comes back, the first guy in the lineup is Wahlstrom, not Bardreau. Wahlstrom, not Bardreau. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, Ken, do you put Eberle on the third line, or do you put him back on the first line?
I put him back on the first line as soon as I can. Maybe not the first game, but within three games for sure, because of what I kind of just threw Ben off with, which, my bad, dude. Because Nelson like seems to be like, it's, I mean, it couldn't be more comical that it literally stops like October 31st, and now it's like November 1st, and he's just like, honestly, did he play tonight?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that was a rough line. So
like, and Beauvillier has spirit. So it's like, you need Bailey. Bailey is going to be the guy to get Nelson going again, if anybody. And Eberle has no problem with chemistry with Barzal. So I think just get his legs under him, get him back on the first line. We just talked about how literally it's next guy up. It doesn't matter who's in the lineup. Everyone just plays. And Eberle is too good not to be on the first line as soon as possible. Like, if he's ready to go within a game or two, you put him back up there. Because they're not going to lose chemistry. Like, we're not going to start losing games because Eberle's in the lineup. When you have Johnston coming in for Matt Martin and not losing a – like, everyone is just – we're going to be fine. Like, I feel like maybe – if this is like a Capuano 10 game winning streak, it's like, don't touch anything. But this is different, you know? I feel like that's my.
Well, here's what I think. I think that if you put Eberle on the third line, you're changing the dynamic of the team a little bit, which isn't a bad thing, but you're going more skill in your top three lines, because I really think that you can put all your shutdown guys down at the bottom, and you can have Casey centering some skilled wingers, whether that's Ladd when he comes back, whether that's, I'm not going to say Komarov or Kunackle, because those are not skilled wingers. Those are your grinders. But Ladd is absolutely skilled. He's more skilled than he's a grinder.
He's like there, but he's not on the same
level. Better than Dalcol.
Okay, well, look, let me just say this. I think if you, first of all, Josh Bailey has the same amount of points as Matt Barzell. They're leading the team with 11 points each. So that's the first thing. So I think
trade them both.
You keep the first line together right now, and you put Eberle maybe on that second line if they have another game like they did tonight against the Sens, because I thought that the second line was pretty bad. Bovey was still moving, but I thought Brassard and Nelson were pretty invisible tonight.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where Eberle slots in if Brassard cools off. I mean, look, he had 5 goals in 5 games. He didn't score tonight. Let's give him a couple of games to see. I don't want to just, they're back to, you know, not scoring, so let's break that lineup. Like, no, like, there's obviously something there. So I don't want to just, you know, throw it away after the second game, but I wouldn't mind seeing Eberle on the third line for a couple of games just to see if it adds a little bit of a dynamic scoring threat to that third line. I mean, maybe you put Casey with Eberle and you see how that goes. I'm not sure.
I was thinking that.
But yeah, I think Wahlstrom's going to be the first to go.
I don't think you separate Casey and Clutter, though, which means one of Clutter and Eberle's playing on the offside, which is fine with me. I'm not sure how Trotz would want it.
I would do this. I would put – all right. Well, I know it might not be the most popular thing, but let me just ask you guys a question before I give you my – would you put Brassard back at center?
That's the thing is that –
because I would put him with Nelson and Bailey at center, and I would move Beauvillier down to the third line because he's just a better third liner, in my opinion, that style of play than Brassard would be.
But I feel like you give up more. I feel like maybe it's just me, but I feel like Beauvillier offers you need more from an offensive standpoint on the second line. The second line is more important than, which kind of, I guess goes against Trotz's ideology, but I just feel like it's more important to have a really good second line. And I would rather a second line of Nelson, are you saying Brassard on the third line with Beauvillier and somebody else?
No, I would say Brassard on the second line with Nelson and Bailey, and you move
Beauvillier
down to the third line.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think I would just, if that's the case, then I'd probably rather put Brassard back, but on the third line. But that's the thing is that you say, all right, is that if putting Brassard back in the third line is getting you the Brassard of the first 8 games, then I don't want any of that.
Yeah, you can't do it. You can't do it. Brassard was a -5 in his first 8 games. He's a +1 now.
But did he play? He wasn't playing with Nelson and Bailey.
No, he was a center. But I'm saying you can't. I don't think you can ever put Derek Brassard back as your center. I know he was signed as a center, but
that was the issue.
He was awful as a center.
It's hard.
Really was.
First, how many games of the season with a new team? Like, I want
one more chance. You can't tell me that he doesn't look like a different player now that he's on the wing.
But yeah, I think it might just be like a goal thing. Like, all right, he got his goal. He's got his feet under him. Give him an opportunity, which is why I think, like, it has a lot to do with what the guys do in the next couple of games, because there's no – Eberle's not going to play against Pittsburgh on Thursday. Because he's still in a non-contact.
No, he's not. But what about Leo? What about Ladd? Like, they're going to be.
But I doubt that both of them are back for Pittsburgh. One of them might be back, so that's straight in for Wahlstrom. And the next guy who's out is Bardreau, right?
But then who's your center?
Then your center is probably Komarov. Unless you want to move Brassard.
Komarov can't win a face-off, though. He's not – like, this is the Islanders' problem. And this is what we said going into the season, is they have awful center depth.
But no one else can win a face-off either, so.
Casey had a great night.
Casey's not going to be play that. We got Casey on the other line.
And you know what? Martin's going to be back in a week to 10 days too. He's already skating. Like, he's fine. He's so
to be honest. Cole Bardrow actually is really good at faceoffs too.
he probably hasn't taken many. That's probably why.
I want to look.
They have some serious decisions to make. They're just about at critical mass because all these guys are coming back like at the same time. You're gonna have everybody ready. You're gonna have Martin, Eberle, Ladd, and Komarov all ready to go within the next week to 10 days.
I feel like this is a make or break for Ladd. Like, they're going to give him his chance, and if it doesn't work, it's over. Like,
I don't think the Islanders are a team that's comfortable having $8 million rotting in Bridgeport.
Trotz is going to be like, all right, listen, I get it. We'll just keep this bum in the lineup because he's making a lot of money. That's not going to happen either. Not with Trotz. With Capuano, yes, 100%. They'll be like, sit down and shut up. Like,
yeah, but Trotz will be like, dude, you're not going to have that much money. Dude, that's going to be $8 million in Bridgeport with two guys.
They did it with Hickey. That's his first step. You didn't think they were going to do that this year with Hickey, did you? No one did.
I wasn't sure.
That was not an Islander move until this year.
I don't think they're going to be wasting $8 million down there. I would be shocked.
It would be a long-term IR thing. Like, he would go out again on injury.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, this is what's crazy about it is that, like, the regular lineup is coming back and the Islanders are on a 10-game winning streak and you don't want them to enter the lineup.
I mean, if Ladd's healthy, it's crazy. I like Ladd's game. I think he is a better hockey player and brings way more to the table in every single way than Michael Dahlkal. And Michael Dahlkal hasn't looked bad. So if Ladd is somewhat healthy, the Islanders are better with him in the lineup than a guy like that. Because he's way more physical.
Let's talk specifically about Ladd. About Ladd.
Let's do it.
Because you're talking about Dahlkal, and look, Dahlkal has been a great substitute for Matt Martin on that fourth line.
Exactly. Which is why it's like, I agree with you that Ladd is a more skilled player than Dahlkal and is a better guy to have in the lineup, but...
Better defensively, too. Like, he does everything better than...
That I'm not so sure about. But what I'm trying to say, or what I'm not trying to say, haven't started talking until just now. What I'm getting to is that right now Michael Dahlkal is playing with Cizikas and Clutterbuck, and I would rather, if you're replacing the next to Cizikas and Clutterbuck position, I'd rather Dahlkal there than Ladd. Call me crazy.
Agreed. I agree. So this was my question to Ken, was where do you put Andrew Ladd?
In his spot. In Dahlkal's spot. Yeah, and no, in Dahlkal's spot.
You're putting Ladd basically with Casey and Clutter then.
If Martin's out, yeah. Like, if we put him in the lineup tonight,
I don't do that.
I think you got to put him over
like
over
the first game, or do you mean like if he stays in the lineup for 10 games?
No, I just mean like ideally, like moving forward.
Oh, no.
Besides the press box?
Yeah. Ideally, I want him in a lineup because I think he's good if he's healthy. But if everyone comes back, I would ideally have him on the third line. Right now, the Islanders' third line is their fourth line. So I would I'd rather have Ladd, Clutterbuck, Casey than Dahlkal because I think Dahlkal's not driving anything. He's just not making mistakes. And Ladd is better than just not making mistakes when he's healthy. And if he's healthy, then he's got to take someone's spot. And it's not, you know, Wahlstrom probably be gone by then, right? So assuming, you know, he's not going to, you know, he'll take his spot first, I guess. But Dahlkal has got to come out somewhere because I don't think he's that good. Like, he's so bad with the puck. Like, he just literally, like, he's really good positionally and defensively. Okay. But, you know, if we want to nitpick on a 10-game winning streak, then I'm not impressed with Dahlkal. I'm just not.
Is Ladd a left wing or a right wing? I don't even have his stats up because he hasn't played yet.
I think he's lefty.
He's a left wing.
So then he's gonna take Johnston's spot before he takes Wahlstrom's spot. Wahlstrom's a right wing.
I think you would move either Johnston or Ladd and play them on the offside because right now you can't. I think the guy that just it's about the guys that come out of the lineup first, and you take Wallstrom out over Johnson right now.
I'll take Dalcala out before Johnson.
Well, yeah, that too. But I think, Wallstrom out before both of them, and it's nothing against Wallstrom. He just needs.
He's not a bottom six forward. He's a top six forward. So put him back in Bridgeport and let him play big minutes. He's playing 7 to 10 minutes a game. It's just not. It's not what he should be doing.
If this is what Dalcala is for the rest of his career, 13 games, 2 points, times that by, you know, whatever, how many more games left. So he gets 15 points a season. And this is okay.
Well, yeah, but
on a 10-game winning streak, yes.
Well, I'm talking about over 82 games, and he brings 15 points to your team, whether they're on a 10-game winning streak or 10-game losing streak. This is okay. He's on a fourth, but he's not even like a fourth line. He's not even physical.
Kind of improving on it.
Yeah, I guess.
He's gotten better and better in that spot. I just don't know. I don't know what you do. I mean, look, we could talk about this forever. I just
– like, dude, okay, the play that Cizikas and Clutterbuck made today to themselves, if Dalcala was one of those two guys, that whole play doesn't happen because he's slow as hell. He just has no – he doesn't ever make a play like that. Like, I'm sorry. And I can't see it happening either. There's zero glimpses. It's just him not making mistakes, and that's what we need right now. But when you're talking about bringing back skill guys, you just have to go with the upside. And there's not much more upside than what Dalcala's doing right now because he doesn't have any creativity. He has a no shot. The guy has a muffin. Like, does he even – I don't even – how many shots on goal does he have this year?
No, he's got a great release. You're way off on that. He has one goal.
I mean
– I know. He's been bouncing around. I mean, he's been on the second line. Look, he's had his chances. Is he ideal for me? No. But you know what you're looking at, the alternative? The alternative is a third line of Derek Brassard centering Leo Komarov and Andrew Ladd. Let's have fun with that.
Oh, I forgot Leo Komarov.
I didn't say I'd pick Komarov over Dalcala because I think they're
both. That's what's going to happen. I mean, that's going to be the lineup. You know that. Those guys are healthy. That's what's going
to
happen.
I feel like Komarov is a very similar guy to Dalcala.
What do you think is going on with Komarov?
I have no idea. Maybe he got – I don't know. It's weird.
When you hear illness and then he's out for
mono, maybe?
Like 5-6 games, like isn't that that's bizarre?
Like mono, maybe, or like.
Well, wouldn't they just say that then, so that nobody has the questions? Like he's not even like he's skating on his own. Like it's weird, and I saw something with like his neck or so. I don't know. It's very strange. I would hate to be Barry Trotz because your team is playing well. They're on a 10-game winning streak, and now you have almost like. Half the forwards are coming back, and like, what do you do? Now I know the fourth line, the Bardreau, Johnston, Wallstrom line. You can almost take that lineup completely off the board, and they'd still be 10-0 with you know their other guys that they would slot in. I'm very curious to see who he uses, and I think they're even more handcuffed now that Brassard is night and day from center to wing, night and day. So
Damon, I have a question for you, and then also for Kenny as well. So Thursday night, the Islanders are at Pittsburgh coming to Barclays Center, right? Barclays Center?
Okay, Wells Fargo. Yeah, the Wells Fargo Center.
No, isn't it at Barclays Center?
The Flyers?
No, Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh's at the Bark. I thought you said the Fargo Center.
Yeah.
It's at MSG. They're playing at MSG, the Islanders. Against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, or you know, Air Canada Center before it became Rogers Arena, or GM Place in Vancouver. I mean, we could play wherever we want. We've got two arenas. We might as well go for, like, seven.
Yeah.
Anyway, Pittsburgh are coming to Barclays Center on Thursday night. Even if you have Komarov and Ladd, do you change the lineup?
Not against Pittsburgh. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't think you bring back two guys in one game.
No, me neither. But do you change the lineup at all?
I think you keep Ross Johnston in there because he's just a physical guy that when he's out there, like look what he did to Brady tonight. Like he punched him in the face twice just because
He's an honestly, like, I'm not just saying this, but he just he just knows the cameras are on him, so he just makes a scene out of everything. It's honestly like he's such a little rat. Like,
yeah, he's annoying.
someone's gonna hurt that kid. Like, cause he just acts like a complete idiot out there. You know, another year of him doing this, and someone's gonna just murder him. Like, I could just see it, because he just, it's just like too much. Like, there's like being a guy who gets under people's skin, and there's a guy who's like, every whistle he's like doing something, and it's like it's not even like it makes sense. It's like he's just doing because he knows people are looking.
He's a ham. He's a ham.
A joke, dude.
He's a ham. So Ben, to get back to your question, I think Wahlstrom is coming out no matter what when you've guys healthy, just because he's not being used properly, and only because they have no other choice. Like, he's not their first choice to be up here. They don't want him playing 10 minutes a night. They want him playing 15, 16 minutes a night, getting constant power play time. So I think he goes back just so that he can keep playing. And I think then you've got more serviceable guys ready to go again, like Leo and like Ladd or like Eberle. If whoever's ready first, I think they're going on that Bardreau line. And I think the harder decision is going to be what you do with Bardreau. Do you send him back to Bridgeport and then put someone at center like Leo, or you move Broussard back? I don't know. That's the toughest decision, I think, is who your third line center is when Casey moves back to the fourth line or whatever line it is. So
would Nelson? Do you think Nelson, Broussard, Eberle could be a thing?
It could. I like the way that the second line looks now with Bo, Broussard, and Nelson. I think that's been a good line, and they just had an off night tonight. So I really don't want to change. I don't want to change much about the top six right now.
I give them like two or three more games, and if each one of them doesn't have like a goal or something, like, because it's just nothing looks bad right now. But if you could pick a line that hasn't been too hot, that has a little bit of expectations, they're the one that's like, past few games, it's like Nelson was just on a hot streak, it looked like. And Beauvillier is kind of, you know, he's doing his thing, getting his assists. But I need someone to, like, pick it up. If Nelson's going to be this streaky, then Beauvillier or Broussard's got to, like, do a little bit more. And I just – is Beauvillier a top six guy yet? Like, we had this conversation, like, what was it, like the third or fourth podcast about, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's puck retrieval. I think you need him. You need a guy like him to get the puck back for the second line. There's a reason why they're winning these games. It's the forecheck, and every line needs a guy who's going to get in there and win the battles. On the first line, it's been Barzal. On the second line, it's been Beauvillier. On the third line, it's obviously Casey and Clutterbuck. On the fourth line, it's been Bardreau. And so, like, every line's got a guy that's in there. And that's why it's not so much, you know, who makes the most money and who the better player is. It's like you've got a good deployment right now and good balance through the lineup. And that's what I hope they don't lose when these guys start coming back, is their balance. Look, you want a guy like Jordan Eberle in the lineup. You find a way to fit him in no matter what. He is an incredible talent. Just where do you put him? That's
top six. He has to be top six. And I think Ladd's got to be bottom six. I mean, that's pretty obvious, right? I mean,
Jamin, I feel like you're almost discrediting some of the people, not on purpose, obviously, but, you know, you're talking about the puck retrievers. Guys like Josh Bailey actually wins the puck a lot. You don't see it because he's strategic about it, but, like, he wins puck battles all the time. He's not the first guy in the forecheck, but the Islanders' forecheck is not necessarily designed for the first guy to win it. You're right about, you know, whether it's Ezekas or Clutterbuck on that line, or Bardreau or Barzal or Beauvillier are the first guys on it. But the Islanders' forecheck, to my mind at least, is not necessarily designed for the first guy to win it. Sometimes they do. It's the second guy. Wahlstrom coming in after Bardreau often is the guy that wins the puck. Or Lee or Bailey.
I think you're putting a way too much stock in that one play where Wahlstrom came in and made the hit and Bardreau made the pass. That's the only time that's happened.
And it happens on every line too. Because Wahlstrom is just one example. But if Barzal's the first guy in, Bailey and Lee win the puck a lot. And if Beauvillier is the first guy in, Nelson and Broussard less so, but Nelson wins the puck a lot. to my mind at least.
It doesn't. It's not going to work though if you have it reversed the other way.
No,
like,
for
it's
sure.
Not, right. It's not the amount. It's not the guys. It's the guys in that certain order. Like
exactly.
Beauvillier can wheel. Barzal can wheel. You know, Bardro can wheel. And like these guys put, like yeah, they might not win the battle when they get there, but just them coming in at the speed they're coming in creates a hesitation or a quick, you know, a play that the defenseman has to make that much quicker. And that play, that pass is going to be that much less accurate because they have a guy pressuring them. And then, then you have Butt Bailey doing what you just said. And because he's in the right position, you know, he then gets the puck because of the pressure that those other first guys can do. And like,
and the crazy Damon said, skills that they have.
Like
exactly, exactly. Yeah. And that's why I'm saying I don't change the first line and I don't change the second line. Like you're arguing for my point. Like I don't want to take Bailey off that first line right now. I would rather take the Wahlstrom, Johnston, Bardot line, and I'd rather fit in the guys there, and whoever's playing well is either gonna move up or if there's an injury, like that's where you go. So sorry, Jordan. Like you've been playing with the first line, and I love Eberle to death. I love him, but he's got to get on the third line and then work his way back up. He's got to move guys out of that spot because the team is too successful right now. So you can get away with that. You can get away with the Bardot line being shaken up because they're not playing many minutes and they're not, you know, contributing in a big way. So you can get away with it. And I think that's where you start. And then you slowly see who's hot and where you go from there.
How about this? Could you move up Casey, third line center with Eberle, put whoever you want on the wing. And because of the style of play, you move Bardot down, centers Clutterbuck and or Dahlkal, Johnson, whoever.
Yeah, you're playing my song there with
like
Casey on the third line.
And Eberle, that could be, oh my God, like we just got another first, second, or a second line, even though it's our third line. You know, like
I agree with you. I just don't think that it's realistic because I don't think he'll separate Cizikas and Clutterbuck.
Yeah.
You got to be careful for recency bias, though, because, like, they had – look, Clutterbuck had a great game tonight, but he hasn't – like, he's – look, he's hit a lot of people. He's going, but it's not like you're going to have this awful thing happen if Casey – I love to see Casey play with some skilled wingers once or twice. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Could be lightning in a bottle.
Who would you put on the other wing?
Yeah, he's
Eberle. Cizikas, who?
Wahlstrom.
Yeah, well, now Wahlstrom's
gonna be the first one gone. Though,
Wahlstrom's
gone. I know, but that would be such an awesome line.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
It would be great. It would be great. Maybe it's I mean,
Vlad?
Maybe it's Bo, and then you put Eberle on the. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's Bo or
Broussard back there. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Broussard. I mean, yeah, you got options. You got options. Like I said, we could talk about this all day long. There's so many. There are just literally so many players that at some point.
Or you just move Clutterbuck, Cizikas, Eberle, and then you just put Komarov, Dahlkal, you know, Bardot, whoever. Like, because that fourth line doesn't matter. Yeah, Vlad. And
yeah,
whoever's
that's actually not a bad idea either. I think I can,
mean, if they're our third
look,
line,
I can see all these scenarios. At the end of the day, Trotz is going to do what he feels is going to be the best deployment.
He's
going to
text me first, and I'll
yeah, he'll
like,
text you first,
just,
and then yeah, exactly,
just help you out. Yeah,
exactly. Well, I think we spent like a ridiculous amount of time on this, but it makes sense because really I don't know where they go from here when these guys start coming back. So I'm very curious to see how this all will shake out.
Yeah, but it's hard to talk about stuff when you're winning. Also, like
I know.
It's like
honestly,
like it's actually pretty tough to have a podcast when you're just winning this much. It'd be easier if we were on like a three-game losing streak.
Right?
Yeah,
isn't it way easier to complain? You're like this guy, he's terrible. He's got to go. Nick Leddy, but like Leddy's hurt, so Kenny's got nothing to talk about.
I love it.
So guys, I've got one complaint actually that is gonna sound crazy because it's totally out of left field. Not a complaint. I'm going to ask you if you think that this is concerning. And I'm not positive about the denominator of this stat because it was different at the beginning of the game. But I believe that the power play is 2 for its last 15 and one of them is a penalty shot.
So are you worried about the power play?
But I'm asking you if you are.
It's hard to worry about the power play after last year because we have like...
Yeah.
It looks a lot better. Looks a lot better. And Eberle coming back is going to make that also better because he was the one like shining spot last year for our power play, I feel like.
Agreed. Yep. I'm not worried about it because they haven't had enough opportunities to get into a rhythm with their power play. I'm more worried about that they're not generating opportunities than I am about the power play actually capitalizing, if that makes sense.
We look like we know what we're doing. Like, last year was a joke. And it wasn't because we had bad players. It was because we had good players with a terrible system. Like, I just don't know what was happening. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Nick Leddy's not the quarterback anymore either. So that was my Nick Leddy talk for today.
Yeah. And we spent all this time talking about the forwards, and we didn't really talk. I mean, we talked a little bit about Pelech, but the D has been great. I mean, Dobson tonight looked great. He was comfortable. Taves is just putting up points. Pollock and Pelech look great. Johnny Boychuk's a warrior. It'll be nice to see Leddy come back because I thought he had a great – he was really playing well before he got hurt. I mean, it's just business as usual. I mean, this team, look, they're going to start losing games here. They're not going to be hot like this forever. But it's going to be really hard the way that they're playing now to see this team not making the playoffs again and not getting at least to where they were last year. And I want to throw one thing out that we were talking about a little bit before the show started. Taylor Hall in New Jersey. I'm going there. Taylor Hall complaining about the fans. We know he's an unrestricted free agent. I want the Islanders, if it's not him, somebody like him, I want them all in this season. I don't care about first-round picks that are going to be late first-round picks. I don't care about some of the prospects if it's going to get us somebody that can help us win now. When Matt Barzal is still on his entry-level deal. When you haven't paid Pollock and Taves what the market dictates they should get. When you have all these favorable contracts because you're not going to be able to do this forever. And, you know, never take for granted that your team is hot and that your team is going to make the playoffs every year. Go all in now. If there's a chance in hell that you can move a Hosang, a number one, and whatever for Taylor Hall, or a number one and a number two, I don't care how many picks we give them. If we can get Taylor Hall for the second half of this season going into the playoffs, you do that move 7 days a week.
Agree or disagree? For Bodie Wild. Is that too much?
For Bodie Wild hasn't played an NHL game yet. So, no, it's not too much. You do it.
It's really hard. I mean, we're talking about signing him at the end of the year or just like trading for him?
Let's make it really easy. Let's just call him a mercenary.
No matter what, he's not signing
with anybody. He's going to test the market.
Think about it, Damon. If Taylor Hall comes to the Islanders, he's going to talk about how amazing it was, how amazing the run was. We're going to make the conference finals or the conference semifinals, and he's going to weigh up his options, and he's going to meet with every team that he wants to, and he's going to meet with the Islanders, and then he's going to go to like
the Rangers
or the okay. Canadiens.
But think about what you just said. You said it so nonchalantly. You were going to go to the conference finals. Like, you wouldn't kill for that right now?
No, of course I would. It's going to rip my heart out when he goes somewhere else.
Oh, so what? This is sports, man. You got to go for it when you can. This team has been so scared and so gun-shy to ever go for it. And you know what we have to show for it? Nothing. Nothing.
So do you think Lamoriello has one last favor that he can call in, be like, hey, listen, you're welcome for those cups. I'm taking Taylor Hall. You think that's possible? Because I don't think there's a chance where they're going to trade Taylor Hall to a division rival. We have a much better chance of getting in the offseason.
I'm more talking about the idea of it.
I get it. I would love him too.
You sit here and you know, everybody's so worried about first round picks. And for every Matt Barzal, there's a Griffin Reinhardt.
There's a Dell Call.
There's a Michael Dell Call. Exactly. I had to get in there. Exactly. No, but you're right, though. You're right. Brian Burke says you have a 30% chance of hitting in the first round. 30% of hitting in the first round. That is not worth getting the services of a proven player and the chance, might be a small chance, but the chance to show him the group you have and to get him to re-sign.
For the Islanders, this team
is not going to get younger. Like, this is an older team for the most part. The guys that are scoring, like, you're not going to be able to do this forever. Matt Barzal is going to make $10, $11 million. Pulak and Pelech, like, this is going to be the team after this. Like, you're not even going to have room to make a move like this. How do you not go for it now?
Well, here's the thing. I agree with you, but also I think this is going to play into your point a little bit as well. But let's assume that cap isn't a problem. What do you think the odds are that Taylor Hall, an unrestricted free agent from the New Jersey Devils, or whether he goes to like Anaheim for a playoff run or something or whatever, and is an unrestricted free agent, what do you think his chances of going to the Islanders are?
Very, very small.
Less than 5%. Even like a ballpark percentage.
Less than 5%.
Okay. Now, let's assume that the Islanders trade for him on at the deadline. What do you think his chances of re-signing are?
The same.
You don't think they're a little bit higher?
Maybe a little bit, but you know what? I've watched this team for too long, and I know that we're not a destination for free agents, so I never have expectations for free agency.
I agree, but I think that increased chance is another incentive, which is one of the reasons why I'm leaning toward agreeing with you. I agree that this team doesn't need more prospects. We have a prospect pool that we can build out of. We are in a position where Oliver Wahlstrom is not good enough for the team, which says all you need to know about the team and Oliver Wahlstrom. And I like the prospects we have. I don't necessarily want to give them up. But we don't necessarily need more in the near future, which is why I'm with you. I think that I'd be okay with giving up a first and maybe a first and maybe a third or something.
I've seen too many teams, and in many sports. I saw it with the Jets. I saw it with the Mets. I've seen it with the Isles. They don't add when they're ready to get to that next level. There's always the waiting game. And I'm not sure what they're ever waiting for. Like, will it suck if you trade a prospect and he becomes a superstar on another team? Of course it will. But if you keep waiting and waiting and waiting for something to happen, you're going to wait your entire window out. And that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
Waiting out the window. You have to show Matt Barzal that he can play with a superstar next to him. This is the same reason why, I wasn't upset when JT left, because I thought that this team was going to excel without him. I always thought that his leadership held them back a little bit, but they never built around him. And I don't want to see them do the same thing now. I know that it's a different story because this team is winning and it's a different feel, but that's because of Trotz's system. Can you imagine? Trotz, this system works and you win a cup when you have superstars that buy into this. That's how the Capitals won the cup. You can't just have the system. You have to have the system and the horses to go with it. We have the system and some horses, but not enough. And it was proven last season, we got swept by a faster team. So you need to get better. What is the point of this if the same thing is going to happen? If you're going to get there, but you don't have the assets to get to the conference finals where anything can happen. A puck bounces one way or the other way. You go to the Stanley Cup finals, it's the same thing. If you're just going in the same expectations, like what's the point? You have to constantly try to get better. I mean, am I crazy?
No, the last time you talked about the Jets and the Mets, the last time one of those teams went for it at the deadline, they added Yoenis Cespedes in 2015 and the Mets almost won the World Series.
Exactly.
I think maybe this is the time to do it. Like you said, I don't know if it was previous to this, but I feel like now it would be the time to do something like that. And Taylor Hall would like literally be the most perfect fit ever. I would forget about Panarin like in a second. But I mean, imagine him and Barzal just like flying. Like it'd be almost unstoppable. I mean, you really can't stop speed like that. It would just be like, would they do whatever they want to do, which. Yeah. I'll be unreal.
I mean, give him a first-round pick. Give him a. It's a deep draft this year. Give him a first-round pick and give him a prospect. They're rebuilding.
Speaking
of
prospects,
rebuilding for a while.
See, Holmstrom had his first 2 goals.
No, I didn't actually.
Yeah, I think he. I know he had his first. I think he had two games in a row where he scored though.
Go use Bridgeport.
We also before we sign off, I also, you know, Otto Koivu is he's getting real close to making his NHL debut. They called him up twice now, mm-hmm. and they're flirting with it. And did you see? I love the fact that he goes back down after his call up, scores 2 goals his first game back with Bridgeport.
Yeah, Holmstrom scored that game. That was the game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so very cool. So I think he's another piece that's going to be a part of the future with this team. So. You know, again, you make the moves. Go for it now. I mean, this team is on fire. They've shown that they can go deep in the playoffs if they have the right pieces. I think you do it. I know major assumptions. You don't know if the Devils would ever trade Hall. You don't know if they would trade him to us or out of the conference. Blah, 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 blah. Do something like that.
Lou connection.
Build around this roster.
Who knows? Lou connection.
Yeah.
Don't discount it. Maybe he's got one last favor, you know? Who knows?
Yeah.
You know,
that's all I got in the chamber this week. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add before we call it.
Well, we've been talking about how difficult it is to get forwards back into the lineup. With, you know, you can't really discount, you know, you can't really criticize players on a, you know, on a 10-game winning streak. And I think it applies to the defensemen too, because Nick Leddy's been playing really well, but so have the other 6 defensemen. Like, where is the slot going to come from? Are they going to dress 7 defensemen? It's like these players are so good. Noah Dobson, literally every single game he's played, he's been better. And his first game, he was good. So there's never been anything less than good on his, you know, number line of games. He's too good to not play. So what happens to the defensive core? It's crazy. I mean, that could be in a deal. You know, you give them I guess that's too much to give for a rental. But if you're making a trade for like a top 6 forward that's not a rental, and you can give one of those 6 like a Mayfield. Plus he's someone that's attractive because his cap is low for a while.
Yeah, well, he has an insane contract.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, what happens when Kunako comes back?
Well, I forgot he existed.
Just kidding. Anyway, I just kind of wanted to throw that in there because, you know, he always seems to play.
They got lucky because they got lucky with the injuries where they didn't have to make these tough calls. But that luck is going to run out now. Everybody's back.
It's a good thing, though.
It's a great thing.
It's a great thing. Injuries happen. We're like, well, we have like 10 guys that can play. Like, we're arguing over like spots because we have too many guys that can play. Like, this is a good thing, you know?
Oh, it's great. It's great. I'm very excited about it. And like I said, I think I'm maybe even more curious than I'm excited. I just want to see what Trotz does with this. Because the man knows his roster very well. And
well, that's
I want
why
to see
I feel like
what he does.
Lou is gonna just like listen. Lou's not just sitting here like idle like we have been. Like the whole point you just tried to make. He's gotta know what you just said. And you know this is the right time to do it. So if there's anyone that's gonna like. I trust to do a move like that, it's Lou. He's not going to like mess up completely and do like a Vanek move or like a whatever trade that was just never worked out. But if you're going to have the right guy like leading the way on this type of move, we have the right guys in office finally to pull this off. So
yeah.
Let's see what happens, you know?
Like, and
it's
I
not
going to
be a rumor either. It's just going to happen. Like,
yeah. And I understand the other side of this, the fans that would say, are you nuts? This team is winning. They're, you know, they're 10 in a row, all this. But you can't tell me that you think this team has enough firepower to beat Washington in a 7-game series or to beat Boston in a 7-game series. You can't tell me that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not. And it's not the same level.
Right. So you could easily, you don't know how the season's going to go. You could easily draw one of those teams in the first round, and then all of this would be for nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only thing definitely I have true. Left before we get out of here is I just have a request to the hockey gods, to the Islanders, to Barry Trotz, to Matt Barzal. please get the winning streak to 12. If you lose the 13th game, it happens. You lose. Please don't lose against Pittsburgh. And I'm thinking of going to the Florida game, so please don't lose when I'm there as well. And then it happens. I get it. If you lose, just please win the next two games for me. Please. I'm begging.
Wait, do you want a fun fact?
Yeah.
The 15 game winning streak. Do you know which team broke that?
Rangers.
The Pittsburgh Penguins.
Wait. Oh, they broke the 15 game. I didn't understand the question at first.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have said that because they're going to win on Thursday. Now that you said that, and I'm going to call you out, and you are going to be bombarded with angry Islanders fans. So I rip your mentions.
That's okay. If I have that kind of power,
reverse jinx the Islanders as your perfection.
There'd be a lot of other interesting things that would have happened with this team already. So unfortunately, I don't have that kind of power. But I'm just saying, just something to consider. I am very much looking forward to that Pittsburgh game, though.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be a good game. So, all right, boys. Well, I think we've covered almost every roster configuration. Talked about the games. We've got Pittsburgh coming up on Thursday. And then is it Florida on Saturday?
Yeah.
Is that the next two? Yeah. So, and then I think they've got a little bit of a break, and then it's Toronto and then Philly. So got a couple of tough games coming up here. This is getting into now the November, December grind, the November that used to kill the Islanders every year that we're not so scared of anymore. But those November, there were months under Cappy where they won like one or two games in all of November. Said
played Halak, everyone.
Yeah.
Miss him.
All right, guys. Well, listen, thank you so much for listening. As always, we appreciate it. You can find us on Anchor FM. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on iTunes. Subscribe. Find us on Facebook, the Long Island Sound Podcast, and make sure you like that Facebook page there. You can find us on Twitter. Ben's at LISound_. I'm at KaijuBlue13. And for the boys, thanks for listening. We're out of here. Later.